big news in the world of recruiting for Tom Izzo and the Michigan State men's basketball team. Michigan State has landed consensus top 20 national prospect Josh Langford of Madison, Alabama, for the class of 2016. The 6'6", 200-pound Langford is a five-star guard, ranked the number 17 player in this class by Rivals.com, the number 13 player by ESPN.com, and number 13 in 247sports.com's composite rankings of various services. Now, Langford's family confirmed the commitment to the Detroit Free Press. Langford actually told ESPN, quote, "I felt a great connection with head coach Tom Izzo and liked the family atmosphere at Michigan State." We'll discuss this big get for Tom Izzo in just a sec. Keep it locked right here. And folks, Draymond Green is throwing a parade. The former Michigan State hoop great and now NBA champion with the Golden State Warriors will be throwing a parade on Saturday afternoon that will begin at 4:30 p.m. down Washington Avenue in Saginaw, Michigan, where he is born and raised. Now going from City Hall to First Merit Bank Event Park, a flyer for the event touts plenty of candy along the parade ripe for children. Then at 9 p.m. at the Dow Event Center's Red Room will be a championship party. I'm sure there will be no kids at that window, all right? All right, Lansing United, they topped the Minnesota United Reserves 4-0 yesterday at home after scoring 9 goals in the first 6 league games of the 2015 season. United made short work of the Minnesota United Reserves defense, putting away 4 goals in less than 50 minutes. United will face what will likely be their toughest remaining league game when they travel to Detroit City FC on Sunday, June 28th. All right, Connor Green combined with 4 relievers won a 7-hit shutout, and the first half Eastern Division champion Lansing Lugnuts headed into the All-Star break with an easy 8-0 win over the Great Lakes Loons Sunday afternoon at Cooley Law School Stadium. The Midwest League takes a midseason break on Monday with the 51st Midwest League All-Star Classic gracing Peoria's Dozer Park at 8 p.m. On Tuesday in Urena, McBroom, Dawson, Anthony Offord, and Rowdy Telez will represent Michigan's state capital on the Eastern Division side. Pretty cool stuff. A lot of All-Stars named on behalf of course, the Lansing Lugnuts. All right, J.D. Martinez homered 3 times and Victor Martinez homered once as the Detroit Tigers turned the tables on the New York Yankees during a 12-4 victory on Sunday at Yankee Stadium. Now, Victor Martinez got the scoring started early for the Tigers with a 2-run homer in the first. J.D. Martinez followed suit moments later to give Detroit a quick 4-0 lead. J.D. Martinez homered again in the 5th and once more in the 6th. Are you kidding me? Now, it snapped a 4-game losing streak for the Tigers, who are now currently 5.5 games in back of the Kansas City Royals in first place of the American League Central Division. And did you see this on Saturday? Mad Max, Max Scherzer, a no-hitter. And his parents were on hand at Nationals Park on Saturday to see that no-hitter against the Pittsburgh Pirates, allowing the Washington Nationals ace to give his dad an unforgettable Father's Day present. Now, Brad and Jan Scherzer decided to visit this weekend from Missouri instead of next month, putting them in the stands to see their son's amazing accomplishment. Hats off to Max Scherzer, impressive stuff. And after 16 holes, Jordan Spieth led by 3 strokes. Now he could only watch as Dustin Johnson lined up a 12-foot putt for eagle that would win him the tournament outright. A putt Spieth expected him to make, but Dustin Johnson would 3-putt. With that, Spieth became only the 6th player in golf history to win the U.S. Open and Masters in the same year. At age 21, he is the youngest Open champion since Bobby Jones in 1923. And Australia shocked Brazil at the Women's World Cup to reach the quarterfinals of the tournament in Canada. Samantha Kerr came closest to scoring for Australia in the first half, hitting a volley in the side netting. Australia now faces the winners of Tuesday's game between Japan and Netherlands. Well, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Looking at my watch here, yeah, it's about that time to start the show.
These greens aren't very good. I'm not going to hold my I'm not going to hold my tongue on this. This is very very disappointing to hold a championship caliber tournament on greens like this. Very inconsistent. We're not looking for perfection, but they surely aren't very good. So I played my butt off to shoot 3-under today. It should have been probably 6, 7, 8-under, but you know, it's frustrating on the greens when you hit really good putts and they're bouncing worse than I've ever seen. So it's the way it is. I guess the USGA, I lost a little respect for the USGA this week.
What is up, beautiful people? Oh, boy. Yeah, that was the voice of actually Billy Horschel, 28-year-old golfer who, of course, participated in the U.S. Open over the weekend, just discussing the conditions of the U.S. Open and talking about the course itself, which if any of you guys tuned in throughout any of the four rounds over the weekend, you guys know that first off, is one ugly course. I gotta say it, folks. Ugly course, you know, the sand and the sand traps there aren't, you know, your typical brown. They were actually gray. If you look at the course itself, it looked, you know, partially burnt from here to there. Just an odd-looking course. And one that, you know, many golfers were not pleased with. And Billy Horschel, as you just heard, was really the most adamant, I guess you can say, and not as you just said. I'm not going to bite my tongue here. I'm going to let you guys know that the conditions out there are terrible. The course is absolutely terrible. But at the end of the day, you know, big time players show up in big time moments. Jordan Spieth, only 21 years old, folks, 21 years old, and has now taken two of the first two majors that we've seen in golf this season. Winning the Masters and now the U.S. Open. As I just stated in our Quick Hit Headliners, he is now just the sixth golfer in the sport's history to ever win both the Masters and U.S. Open to begin the season. You gotta be kidding me. This kid's unbelievable. And you know, I tell you what, there's not many times where I tune in on a Sunday to watch golf if my boy Tiger Woods isn't in the running. But I tuned in, and it was one of those things where, you know, I went home. It was Father's Day weekend. Also, I want to give a big shout-out to all the fathers out there. Hopefully, you guys had a fantastic Father's Day. I went home and got to see my dad, saw my stepdad as well, my uncles. I mean, it was a fantastic weekend. And, you know, when we were just sitting in there, we were all at my grandmother's house. And we were actually, because my uncle, he's a big TV junkie. And he loves different series and shows, but he doesn't have the luxury of having HBO. So I have HBO. I had my laptop down there, and you know, he wanted to see the final season finale of Game of Thrones. I'm a big Game of Thrones guy too. So we're watching Game of Thrones actually, and I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, okay, I'm paying attention to the leaderboard, just trying to see, because I even hit on this on my ESPN Streak for Cash. I chose Jordan Spieth to win this whole thing. But then I'm sitting there, and it's coming very, very close. It's coming, you know, down to two people, Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson. And, you know, as I said, man, I'm sitting there, and, you know, it just flashes up on my phone. You know, it's coming down to the wire. And after 16 holes, Jordan Spieth led by 3 strokes, folks. And then you have Dustin Johnson. Folks, he's got a 12-foot putt for eagle that could have won the tournament. Could have won the tournament. If he misses it, it's all right. He'll birdie, and this thing goes to a playoff, which I would have been certainly glued to my television for. But he misses that. Folks, he actually 3-putted, and Jordan Spieth wins the U.S. Open. It was incredible. It was incredible to watch. As I stated, there's not many times if my boy Tiger Woods isn't playing, there's not many times that I tune in on a Sunday to see who pulls out a golf tourney. I was glued to my TV in those final holes to see who would win that one. Fun to watch and very healthy for golf. I want to invite now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Oh, well, first off, I'd actually like to censure WKAR for what they just did, because they did something horrible in the program before ours. They revealed the ending of Game of Thrones Season 5.
No, they did not. Are you kidding
me? Censor alert. You know, spoiler alert.
Oh, my goodness.
So, they did. Fortunately, I had seen it. But for all those poor souls who hadn't finished it yet, can you imagine listening to WKR, the last place you'd expect?
So, oh, goodness. That's crazy.
You know, spoiler alert, you got to throw in the spoiler alert.
For those that tuned in to the show before ours did and actually have not seen Game of Thrones or do watch the show but didn't get to see what happened at the end of Season 5, we apologize, I guess.
Yeah.
If that cat got let out the bag, we apologize, all right? But pretty funny stuff, man. But did you tune into the U.S. Open yesterday?
I did. And what a finish. You know, you think of Jason Day, and you just feel so bad for that guy because he had the eagle to win that looked like it was going in.
Or for Dustin Johnson, you mean?
Dustin Johnson,
right,
rather.
Right.
Yeah. He had the eagle to go in. Mm-hmm. It looked like it was going in, and it just veered left. And then his 3-foot putt to, you know, just
that could have pushed it to a playoff.
Would have gone to a playoff on Monday, and it didn't. It just didn't fall. So, feel terrible for the guy. It's actually not the first time he's relinquished a lead like that either in a major. He did also in 2010 when he had a 3-shot lead going into the final round. So, poor guy, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. there's not much you can say. He's a good golfer, great golfer, but he just misses it in clutch time. So, hopefully he can get one, because once you get that one clutch putt to fall, it's easier to get the next few too.
Now, I got to ask you this, Isaac, because it is something that I had an exhausted debate with one of my friends, when we were just shooting texts back and forth. He's a big golf fanatic, and we're sitting there exchanging dialogue about what we had just seen. Again, Dustin Johnson, he ends up 3-putting. Jordan Spieth is now the U.S. Open champion. And what I've been seeing ever since yesterday, ever since that tournament, you know, was done, said and done, and you know, ever since I woke up, you know, this morning and definitely was reading about the tournament, you know, there's one word that I think people have to be careful with when throwing around when looking at how Dustin Johnson lost. I want to ask you, Isaac, first. Would you say Dustin Johnson choked?
Yes.
Why?
Definitely. Because that 3-foot putt, now I know people were missing it the whole day, but at the same time, Dustin Johnson, and what I have to say about the course as well is, although the course was horrible and it looked like California desert instead of nice golf grass, it did. The best players made it to the final round. They really were. The best players were battling it out for the last final hole. So, but yes, I'd say he choked because he had two of those, and that 3-foot putt, that's something that he was making to get to that point. So, I don't know. And the fact that he's got history with it and, you know, lost the lead in 2010. So, yes, I would say he choked.
I would, too. And this is the thing he tried to come at me with. And he was a big component. I am, too. I mean, we played the Billy Horschel bite, Billy was very just adamant in saying, this course is terrible. And you could see it. Anybody could see that. And in that moment, you know, where, you know, I understand, okay, the course is terrible. Maybe if they're playing at a different course, who knows? Maybe Dustin Johnson does make that 12-foot eagle, wins it outright, or maybe he makes the second putt and they go to a playoff and maybe he pulls out that. Who knows? But at the end of the day, everyone out there, everyone who grabbed their clubs and played in the U.S. Open had to deal with that very same condition. So don't give me any excuses as to why Dustin Johnson missed it.
Well,
if you really look at that, if you look at, you know, when Dustin missed that eagle putt, Isaac, to me, it seemed as though he just rushed the second shot. Like he thought it was a gimme. He's like, all right, well, let me just go right up here and just smack this one in, and boom, it didn't sink. And he shock just came out over everyone. And that's a gimme putt. In those moments, when the game is on the line, you cannot expect anything to be easy or given to you. You can't take anything for granted. I think, you know how the game of golf is. It's so crazy. I think you should have just stepped back, taken a deep breath, and said, all right, here we go. Money. Let's go to a playoff. But he didn't, you know, and it's in those moments that really separate the good from the great players. But you got to give it, you know, hats off. Hats off to Jordan Spieth. Hats off to the game of golf. And the reason I say that is because we've seen how the conversation has shifted now, Isaac, to who is going to be the next up and coming. Who's going to be the next Tiger Woods? You know what I mean? I don't think there'll ever be another Tiger Woods in the game of golf, to be honest with you, because he affected change in the game on a variety of aspects. When you talk about, you know, how he is an African-American and an Asian golfer, I mean, that demographic tuned in just to watch him play because they saw someone that looked like them playing a game that historically does not have African-Americans or Asians, for that matter, really involved in it. And it just made people flock to the television just to watch this guy who looks so different from the rest of the people who were playing the game. Jordan Spieth is a fantastic golfer. Fantastic. 21 years old. He's got nerves of steel. And it's so amazing. You talk about that word clutch. I mean, there were moments, and there was a statistic thrown out that, you know, whenever, you know, Jordan Spieth double bogeyed a hole, he followed it up every single time, Isaac, with a birdie. That, if that ain't resiliency, I don't know what is. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable stuff. Jordan Spieth, I mean, and to win a Masters, check for a major there. In the same season, he does it in the U.S. Open. Check another major there. He has won both majors so far. I mean, again, he's only the sixth golfer to do this, and he's so young. If I'm the game of golf and realizing that, okay, we haven't had an athlete, you know, you could probably say Rory McIlroy, because Rory McIlroy, who I think is in a bit of a funk right now, Rory has been that guy since Tiger has been on his downfall since 2008. Rory has kind of been the guy that everyone's gravitated towards, who's been playing stellar golf. He's kind of fallen off a little bit, and now you have Jordan Spieth. If I'm the game of golf and looking at how this kid is setting history, I'm putting him everywhere. I mean, he's going to be doing the Jimmy Fallon show tonight. Maybe tomorrow he's going to be on Jimmy Kimmel's show. I'm trying to get him out on commercials. I'm trying to, you know, sponsorships are going to come without a doubt. But I'm trying to have him on every single Gatorade commercial that you can, because you want to market the heck out of this kid, because he's so young. He has a bright future in the game, and he is the now. He is the now in the game of golf. So if I'm golf and I'm realizing, hey, we need to find who that next guy is, this kid needs to be marketed times 100 if I'm the PGA.
Yeah, I agree. But Al, the other thing about this course is, and you said it, it's not like that 15-year-old kid won. No, the best golfers were competing for the championship. Mm-hmm. And no, the course conditions were not ideal. It wasn't the epitome of what a golf course should look like. But the best battled it out and the best won. Both you and I, before this tournament started, called Jordan Spieth to win it, which, first off, shout out to us for being right.
I should have led the show with that, huh? A bite of that.
Never wrong to brag when you're right. But anyway, so the best really did battle it out. But you're exactly right. This kid is the best thing since Rory McIlroy. Like you said, McIlroy's declined
And McIlroy's still young, too. I mean, we could easily – Rory McIlroy, and we know how the game of golf is. It's so tough to stay on top for so long. But Rory is going to be back. We already know that.
He will.
Rory, who knows? Rory may win a major, you know, next month. Who knows? But at the same time, I mean, what Jordan Spieth is doing is really incredible. And you got to milk the heck out of it.
At the age of 21, yeah, the kid's 2 years older than me. So, no, all props to this kid. And Jordan Spieth, he's a likable guy. He's very personable. You saw him doing the interview after yesterday's match, or, you know, and he was so nice, so humble. So you really have to try to market this kid, try to brand him as the future of golf, because Al, Tiger is done. You know, like, there's no way that golf can keep going off Tiger Woods' legacy It's time for the Jordan Spieth era, maybe.
But you know what, Isaac, I will say, and that's kind of a great segue into the other point that I have. I always believe that in sports, you have to have that dominant force, that team or athlete that everyone is vying to beat. That one horse that everyone is trying to just get the leg up on or even contend against. To equate it to other sports, in baseball, who is it? The New York Yankees. Every single year, everyone's expecting the New York Yankees to go far and to win a World Series. That's the expectations that they have. In basketball, in the NBA, historically, it has always been the Lakers. Now, it's starting to turn over to one athlete, which I think has been this dynamic for like the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years now, LeBron James. LeBron James is clearly the best athlete in the game, and whatever team he's on, everyone really loves to go against LeBron James. He's like that villain, you know what I mean? Back in the 90s, it was the Bulls and Michael Jordan. In football, right now, it's the New England Patriots. In tennis, it's Serena Williams. People want to watch to see dynamic figures and dominant forces to see if they are going to fall. That's what made Tiger Woods so great. When Tiger Woods was playing, it was clear that he was better than everyone else, and it was going to be interesting to see if anyone could be close to stopping him. Jordan Spieth, I don't know if he could be that guy. I don't know. Right now, he's doing it on the course. He can win, and it's compelling to watch. But another thing that makes those figures that I just stated so interesting is because, going back to that villain word, people love to watch a villain. People love to watch that guy who may be a little bit too cocky for his own good and just has that killer instinct. Jordan Spieth, when I watch Jordan Spieth, when you talk about his personality, Isaac, he's just a nice guy. It's nothing that makes me really dislike him at all. You know, he's just a fantastic golfer to watch. But other than that, there's no drama that comes with Jordan Spieth. And that's what made Tiger Woods so great. I mean, because Tiger was a guy, he wanted to chew you out. He wanted to stomp on your throat. And he had that edge, that swag that was developed later on in his career. We saw the fist pumps and him, you know, cursing after a bad shot and whatnot. People love to watch that stuff. I don't think that there's another figure like that in the game of golf. And I think sports is fun to watch when you have a figure like that.
Well, Al, I think there eventually will be. I think Tiger is replaceable in the game of golf just because of what he brought to it, the charisma, the swag. I think other people will try to emulate that. I think it's doable. At the same time, not sure if anybody can be as revolutionary. You talked about the race dynamic, and that is a big deal. Now we look at the women's golfing. You know, nowadays, Asian women typically dominate that field. So, And that's part of Tiger's impact because of what he brought to the sport in terms of incorporating minorities who previously would not have been that interested in golf.
Right.
But at the same time, I feel like when you're a competitor, it doesn't really matter quite as much who the guy across the court or across the field from you is, how mean he is or how bad he is. It's just, it's a matter of beating him. And I think especially, when you're not face-to-face with the guy, I think it's just a matter of teeing off and doing your best. I don't think the head-to-head competition is as big of a deal.
Well, the point I'm making is it's more compelling as a casual sports fan to tune in to a guy who just has this edgy attitude. You know, and again, LeBron has it. You know, going back to the press conference we saw in the NBA Finals, him stating, "I'm the best player on the planet." Instantly, you saw people go on, you know, social media and voice how they do not like LeBron James. And they probably know in the back of their head that, yeah, he is the best player on the planet, but for him to come out and say that, why would you do that? And people love to hate an individual or a villain and love to root against a villain in the world of sports, and it makes it fun to watch. And again, Tiger was that guy. And even looking at other golfers, you know, Phil Mickelson has a certain edge to him, especially during his heyday and his prime. Rory McIlroy has that sort of edgy attitude as well. Jordan Spieth just is a guy that, hey, you know, he's a great golfer. He's winning. But other than that, he's not a guy that is going to have that edge, that guy that you're going to root against when looking at him play.
It is a little bit too early in his career, I feel like, to say that, too.
When he is 21. Right.
Entered the league, nobody hated him. He was the most likable figure in basketball. He was dancing, taking imaginary photos with his teammates on the sidelines. There was no way you could not like LeBron when he entered the league. Now that he's great, a lot of people dislike him. So I think Jordan Spieth's personality will adapt to that greatness if he continues with these results. And that's not a given.
Right, it's not. Not at all, especially in the game of golf. What do you think about Jordan Spieth? Again, folks, becoming just the sixth player in golf history to win a Masters and a U.S. Open in the same season. Again, the youngest U.S. Open winner since 1928. Are you kidding me? And, of course, that occurred with Bobby Jones in 1923, excuse me. So, again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, we are taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. I really briefly want to just chat about the newest verbal commit for the Michigan State men's basketball team. Michigan State has landed consensus top 20 national prospect Josh Langford of Madison, Alabama, for the class of 2016. He's 6'6", 200 pounds. He's a five-star guard, ranked as the number 17 player in his class by Rivals.com, the number 13 player by ESPN.com. And folks, a pretty cool and interesting story about Josh Langford. Isaac, I think you may want to manhole this one.
Yeah, this is something that I'm going to brag on for quite a while if he stays committed to MSU. But Dustin Johnson
I wish Dustin Johnson walked in. That would be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I'm just messing up names today.
It's Monday. Yeah,
but, yeah, it's Monday. Long weekend and late night last night. Josh Langford, rather, though. He's actually interested in sports journalism. So when he visited a couple days ago, he took a tour of the WKR studios, and I got a chance to meet him, talk to him, and, he, you know, super nice kid. He was super friendly, amiable, and hopefully we get to see him helping out at WKR next year. But now my claim to fame, in addition to knowing Odell Beckham Jr., in addition to not much else, but is being able to, you know, help recruit Josh Langford to MSU. So at least I didn't do that much wrong. I didn't turn him off of it.
Exactly. It's funny.
Not yet.
Yeah, because Joanne Gerstner, who is fantastic. Joanne is sort of the one of the brainchilds of the Michigan State sports reporting program for the students here at MSU. And Joanne hits me up last week, like, Al, you know, we got this recruit coming in, and, you know, he's very interested in sports journalism, and the program wants to just, you know, him to, you know, see what we do. And, of course, we have countless students who come, you know, in on current sports and help out semester by semester. Some of the athletes who have worked with us, of course, Andre Sims, MSU wide receiver, who now has transferred to Georgia. Also, Darian Harris, he's helped out. Very, just a really nice guy, man, who plays with the MSU football team. And, yeah, so, you know, Joanne's like, yeah, can we bring him in just for a show? So I believe that was Friday. And Thursday or Friday, one of the days. And, you know, he comes in and, you know, I'm sitting there with Jesse Goldberg Strassler talking about the Lansing Lugnuts. And behind the glass, I see Josh. And I heard he's just a really, really just nice, nice kid. Five-star guard, 6'6", 200 pounds. If you have not seen this kid's highlight tape, just do a quick Google because he is unbelievable. I think this is a big snag for Tom Izzo and company.
Mama, like, that kid can shoot.
He can shoot. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Right.
Watching his highlight tape, he's athletic, but his shot is so silky, so smooth. It really is so much potential in that, because shooters who can create their own shot and have the size to do it are a rare commodity, and they've got more potential than just about anybody. Josh Langford's one of those players. So, big snag for MSU. Now it's just a job of hanging on to him and not letting him Swanigan.
And that's the thing. Exactly. Like Caleb Swanigan did, you know, not too long ago. I mean, again, it's just a verbal commitment. I wouldn't be surprised. Who knows what could happen in the coming months. But right now he is saying that he is committed to Michigan State University. We'll see, though. You know, I take that with a grain of salt, all right? You know how recruiting is. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air, or even tweet me at Al Martin WKR. Also, really quick, Isaac, you were out at the Lansing United game yesterday. A big win for them, actually a 4-0 victory against the Minnesota United Reserves. Big win at home for this team.
Well, Al, I showed up about 10 minutes before the game, and it seems like they had already scored. The game just got started with a quick bang. They contested a minute in, and then 3 minutes later, they scored courtesy of Matt Brown. So, great win for Lansing United.
Yeah, and we'll play a few bites from that game later on in the show. This is our first break, though. Again, folks, when we come back, we have a pretty cool feature to bring you guys. Is current state's own Mark Bayshore got a chance to chat with Olympic gold medal gymnast Jordan Weber. You don't want to miss that, folks. You are tuned in to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. And going back, Isaac, because you tried to bash us real quick here on WKAR when we were talking about the show before ours, giving out the what happened at the end of season 5 of the intense Game of Thrones show. But they did give a disclaimer, so credit to them. They did say, hey, spoiler alert, pause, this is what happened. So we want to definitely shout that out to
yes,
you, okay?
Yes, definitely. But and with that being said, because our boss just called in to inform me of that.
Yeah,
but,
man, Peter called in, dude. Yeah, Peter Worf, our station manager here, was like, hold on now, did he give a disclaimer? So we had to let that be known, all right?
So, yeah, shout out to WKR. With that being said, just in the future, like right before that, I think you still got to be like, hey, we're about to say somebody big died.
Turn it off. Just turn it off. Just turn it down. You know what I mean? So, fantastic show, though. It was a big shocker, and I'm pretty sure. I mean, come on now. We live on social media world now. Folks that I know that are big Game of Thrones fans who didn't get a chance to see it, just being on Facebook and Twitter, individuals just don't care, and they put it out there already. So people that I know, they didn't get a chance to watch that finale. They already knew before watching the show live because of what people had already given out via social media. So there you have it. That's the world we live in. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, I'm excited to bring this one to you, folks. After years of single-minded dedication that began very early in her life, Jordan Weber's stellar gymnastics career reached pinnacles in 2011 and 2012. Those were the years she won a world championship in all-around competition, and a gold medal in the London Olympics. Earlier this year, the DeWitt native announced her retirement from elite competition. Today, the 19-year-old's focus is more on college. A visit back home has been punctuated by registering for her fall classes at UCLA, where she studies psychology. Current State talked with Jordan Weber about what these past few months have been like since she announced her retirement.
It's been a really different experience. I mean, ever since I was 4, I've been doing gymnastics, competing, training 30 hours a week. So it definitely was a big transition for me going from training all the time, just having my whole life consumed by gymnastics to, you know, being an actual normal person and a normal college student. It's the craziest transition, but I've actually really enjoyed it. I'm going to college at UCLA, and I've just been focusing on school and doing a little bit of traveling here and there still, you know, doing other fun things like that. But it's been a big change, but I'm really enjoying it.
You've become the team student manager for the UCLA gymnastics team. You're enjoying that?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it was, ever since I can remember, my two big goals were to go to the Olympics and to be a college gymnast. And I really had my heart set on that. But when I got the opportunity to go professional in gymnastics, I thought to myself, I still kind of want to go be a part of a college team in some way. So that's why UCLA was my dream school. And I definitely wanted to still be a part part of the gymnastics team there. So that's why I took on that role, and I get to be in the gym every day with them and help them kind of use my experience and knowledge in the gymnastics world to kind of help the team. And, you know, I've become really close with a lot of the girls on the team, and they're, you know, they were my first friends when I got to college. So it's been a lot of fun, and I really enjoy being a part of that team.
You've definitely raised the bar on being a student team manager. It's probably not too many Olympians who are student team managers. How do you like California?
I love it. I mean, it's very, very different than Michigan, where I'm from. But, you know, of course, there's the beach 5 miles away from UCLA. So that's not a bad thing at all. But there's just a lot to do. I mean, on top of school, you know, you can go hiking, you can go to the beach, and you can do lots of different things. And now I have the free time to do that. So it's been really fun to live in California.
Remind us what you felt your professional options were 6 months or so ago. I mean, how long could you have competed? How long could you have performed? And what were your options?
Well, I mean, of course, a lot of people know that after the Olympics, I went back in the gym and I started training again. And my goal was to, you know, get back in shape and begin competing again, hopefully make the national team again. And then there was that ultimate goal of making the 2016 Olympics. But as I was training, I realized, you know, I did want to start college, and I did want to kind of move on to the next chapter of my life. And I went to UCLA at the beginning, and I started training there. But I started to realize it was tough to balance, you know, college classes and training. And you know, I just kind of realized that I was ready to move on. Not only had I been dealing with injuries my whole career, and it was a long road, and I just kind of sat down and looked at everything that I accomplished, and I was world champion and Olympian, and I just realized that I accomplished all of my goals, and it was time, and I was ready to move on and just kind of turn the chapter in my life and experience new things.
It felt right.
It did. You know, at first it felt weird because I could not even picture my life without gymnastics, going to practice every morning. So at first it didn't feel right, but now that I look back on the decision, it definitely feels right now.
We're talking with Jordan Weber, DeWitt's Olympic gold medalist, who competed on the American women's gymnastics team at the 2012 Games in London. Do you have a fitness routine now?
I do. And I think talking about transitioning from gymnastics, that was one of the biggest things. You have to find other ways to stay fit other than doing 7 hours of gymnastics every day. So I do a lot of I do a little bit of running, some spinning classes, and I still go in the gym and sometimes flip around just for fun sometimes. But it is fun to just kind of explore all the different workouts and everything.
It is coming up on 3 years since the Olympics. How often do you think back on the games?
All the time. I definitely, those moments that I had in London with my team are things that I'll never forget. And I still think about it all the time. And I actually keep my medal at home in Michigan. So every time I come back to visit, like right now, I always look at it, and it reminds me of all those experiences that I had at the games and how amazing that all was.
So which single experience do you flash back on most often?
Definitely the team competition. It was an experience like no other, and I just remember walking into that arena and feeling so confident in my team and myself and just wanting to win that gold medal so bad. And we were so prepared for that. We had practiced all of our lives for that moment. And just to go out there and be able to relax and trust in our training and go out there, I don't remember being stressed at all during that competition. I remember just having fun and really enjoying it and cheering on my teammates. And we just did our job, and we went out there. And to be able to represent your country and win a gold medal for your country, that was quite the experience. And that's definitely the moment I look back on the most.
As impressive as the athletic accomplishment is, I'm almost as impressed with the mental dimension of what you do, of being a great athlete. How would you describe your mental approach to competition or to practice even?
Well, most people will tell you that gymnastics is probably 80% mental and 20% physical. It is the amount of mental strength that you need to have in order to compete on a big stage like that, it's crazy, you know. To be able to go out there and perform and do your best when the time counts, it's definitely something that takes a lot of practice. And I was just yesterday, I was doing a clinic with a bunch of little gymnasts, and they asked me, how do you deal with your nerves at a competition? And I told them one of the biggest things that I had to do was train my mind to make practice feel like a competition and to make competition feel like practice. So it's kind of funny when you think about it, but it's all about just training your mind and closing your eyes and visualizing your routines every night and just rehearsing it over and over again, sometimes just in your mind, because that can be more powerful than actually practicing the routine sometimes.
So visualization is a part of your routine. Jordan Weber is our guest here on Current State on WKAR. You are incredibly skilled in a variety of gymnastics separate events. You were world champion in the all-round in 2011. But is there an event, a single event, that you were always just even a little bit more excited to compete in than the others?
I definitely really enjoyed competing on floor. I think that's the one event you just get to go out there and not only perform what you've been practicing, but you just get to kind of entertain the crowd and smile and just kind of make the, like, really bring the judges into your choreography and your routine and perform. And it's one of those things you can just put all your energy into it and just have fun. And so I really enjoyed competing floor. But, you know, another favorite event of mine was beam. I always thought there was so many skills to learn on beam that it was always a challenge. And I really enjoyed that challenge every day in the gym. But definitely floor was my favorite to compete.
How are you getting through this period where you have less competition, though? Are you investing that in the UCLA team then? Or, I mean, how are you getting that out of your system now?
It definitely is hard to get used to. I mean, for my whole life, I had these, like, very concrete goals of this is the next competition, this is the goal, and I always had that really major goal of going to the Olympics in the back of my head. So once all that is over, it's kind of hard to get used to not having those goals in my head, so I kind of have to set goals in other ways. You know, what can I do to help the UCLA team to the best of my ability? You know, I kind of have to transform those goals into school. You know, I really want to do my best in school, you know, to learn. I'm majoring in psychology, so I'm hoping to take what I learned there to kind of help me with my career and with the team. So it's all just about, you know, setting new goals for myself because I don't have those gymnastics type goals anymore.
During the Olympics, you were actually competing with a stress fracture in your right leg. How did you manage to work through that?
I think I just thought to myself, you know, it took me so long to get to the Olympics, and I trained my whole life for this one moment. I wasn't going to give up that easy, you know. It wasn't, it was something that I could work through the pain. I obviously couldn't train as much as I wanted to. I had to take a little bit off of the tumbling and the pounding of my leg during training while we were in London. But of course, I wasn't going to give up and I was going to push through it. And to be honest, when I was out there on the competition floor, a lot of my adrenaline just took over and I didn't really feel the pain. So that was great. And I'm really glad that I pushed through it. And as soon as the games were over, I put a boot on my leg and let it heal. So it was definitely worth pushing through the pain.
Is there one moment that stands out to you as being the highlight of your career?
Definitely. I mean, obviously the Olympics, winning that gold medal, just because I went through so much adversity and a little bit of disappointment not making it to all-around competition, and to go out there and 2 days later and win a gold medal for my country and with my team, I think that was definitely one of the best moments of my career. And then also the year before, becoming world champion and just saying that at that moment, I was the best gymnast in the world. I mean, that was amazing, and I can't believe I accomplished that. But it was just kind of a combination of all my hard work just paid off in that moment. And same thing with the Olympics.
It's really exciting just to hear you talk about it. It's great to have you here. We're talking with Jordan Weber, DeWitt's Olympic gold medalist, who competed on the American women's gymnastics team at the 2012 Games in London and was world champion. Now that you're out of it, though, you can do some things you weren't able to do before. You couldn't ski because of your gymnastics career. Have you skied yet?
I have not. I mean, I moved to California, so I don't really have the snow anymore, but hopefully someday I'll try skiing again, but definitely want to.
If you could pick what you'd be doing in 5 years, Jordan, what do you think it would be?
Ooh, tough question. Definitely after college, I'm hoping to go to grad school. So hopefully going to graduate school and, you know, I definitely a big goal of mine is to continue giving back to the gymnastics community and traveling around. And, you know, one of my passions is motivational speaking. So hopefully I'll be able to do some more of that in the future. And maybe in 5 years, I'll be traveling around doing some motivational speaking, not only for little gymnasts, but for all types of people. So.
Do you like California enough that you see yourself still in California in 5 years?
I do. Yeah, I definitely want to stay in California. It's a lot of fun there.
We are thrilled to have you here today, and we're really pleased that you carved out some time to talk to us and our listeners. Jordan Weber is DeWitt's Olympic gold medalist, who competed, of course, in the 2012 Games in London and is a former world champion.
How cool is that? Shout out to Current State's own Mark Bayshore, again, as he sat down with Jordan Weber, if you remember, they were dubbed as the Fierce Five during the Olympic Games in London, which was comprised of five members: Gabby Douglas, Michaela Maroney, Allie Raisman, Kayla Ross, and the one, the only, DeWitt's own, Jordan Weber. I vividly remember watching those five, I mean, gain such national attention. Of course, Gabby Douglas ended up winning an individual gold medal during her time with the team, but they were so memorable. I've never seen any, you can kind of compare it to, you know, just of Olympic greats of the past. And but I've never seen, I don't think I've ever seen it in my lifetime, a gymnast team with as much hype that was surrounded around those five. Do you remember that at all, Isaac? You remember those Olympic Games in London?
Oh, yeah. Gabby Douglas was, how old was she when she did that? 14?
Oh, boy, yeah. She's very, very young, which is considered, like, that age is, like, the prime of Olympic competition for a gymnast. So, yeah.
I can't even fathom that, though, being 14 or 16, whatever it is, and handling that spotlight. What a great feature from current state, though.
Yeah, definitely appreciate that. Again, folks, you hear the phone lines, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this Monday edition of Current Sports by bringing to you weekend winners. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back, ladies and gents. Again, you are tuned into WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Got to remind you all that, hey, we tape Current Sports TV this Wednesday at 3 p.m. If you missed last week's sit down, you missed a doozy. Got a chance to pick the brain of the longest tenured play-by-play man in the state of Michigan. He is the voice of the Detroit Pistons, as well as the Michigan State football team, George Blaha. Oh, it was so fun sitting down with George, a guy who I have been watching and listening to ever since I was a little tyke. If you happen to miss that episode or any episode in current sports TV history, all you got to do is simply go to video.wkar.org, check out that chat and so much more. But this Wednesday, I'll be sitting down with the head coach of the Michigan State women's soccer team, Tom Saxton. Of course, with the Women's World Cup taking place as we speak, Tom is going to be joining me to talk about just how women's soccer in general is growing across the board. So you do not want to miss that again. That chat will be taking place in our WKAR-TV studios this Wednesday at 3 p.m. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, all you got to do is go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. And again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's go to our phone lines right now. We've got our good friend of the show, my man Ray, on line one. Ray, how you doing? And welcome to Current Sports.
Big Al, you miss me?
I did miss you. I haven't heard your voice in over a week now. How you been, brother?
Oh, just jogging. I had to go to a couple funerals, so I've been a little busy.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Ray.
Oh, that's all right. They're in a better place than we are. You know about Jesus, right?
There we go. There we go. They are
in
a better
place. Go to
heaven,
there's no more pain and sorrow there.
That's right. Preach, brother. Preach.
Hey, what are the bullies saying down there? They're going to end up in the cellar in the Big Ten of football?
Well, I tell you what, Michigan State, man, I don't know. Have you seen, Ray, the incredible list that Michigan State's football recruiting program has been putting together for 2016? They're calling it Dream Team 16. They're actually, right now, that class is ranked top five nationally. How about that, Ray?
Well, maybe Harbaugh put his shirt back on now.
Yeah, well, Harbaugh's going to work, too. Don't sleep on U of M. I mean, Harbaugh's trying he's pulling out all of the stops and all the trades to try and woo different recruits nationally. We all know about the whole satellite camp discussion. So Jim Harbaugh, he's putting in a lot of work. I will say that, Ray.
Yeah, I know. He'll get them turned around, but he'll get them put on probation, too, in a year or two.
We'll see. We'll see if that happens, Ray.
Hey, What do you think of the U.S. Open that was just played?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we gave our thoughts at the top of the hour. I think that Jordan Spieth, I mean, 21 years old, again, only the
sixth. Unbelievable what he's doing.
Really unbelievable. I mean, only the sixth golfer to win both the Masters and U.S. Open in the same season.
I thought he had a one when he got that birdie, and then he turns around double bogeys, and then he hits a shot up there that should have been an eagle. He almost made an eagle. And then that other guy, I don't know how he three-putted there, but he did.
Well, that's the epitome of clutch. I mean, you know, I gave a stat that every single time that, you know, Jordan Spieth, you know, bogeyed or double bogeyed throughout the four rounds of the U.S. Open, he followed it up each time with a birdie. That's called resiliency, right?
I know, but he doesn't seem like he's 21. He seems like he's 30 or 40 the way he acts on the golf course.
Yeah, he plays like a veteran. It's so amazing. I think you hit the nail right on the head, Ray, because when you look at him and look at his demeanor and the way he carries himself like a veteran golfer. And he's got nerves
very
still.
Mature.
Yeah, very. Oh,
very mature.
Very, very, very.
He might end up breaking Nicklaus's records if he can stay healthy and stay away from a woman or car accident like Tiger did.
That's very true.
Tiger's never been the same. I mean, he's 16 over.
Yeah.
And it would have been 30 or 40 over if he'd had to play the weekend.
And, Ray, you're hurting my heart because you know how big of a Tiger Woods fan I am.
I'm not saying he can't make it back.
I don't know.
I've
thrown in the towel, Ray. I don't think he can. Tiger Woods is not going to be the Tiger Woods that we saw back in 2000 and in the 90s. He just doesn't have, you know, excuse the pun, but he doesn't have that eye of the tiger that we once saw.
Well, even if he starts playing better, these other kids that are all coming up, these guys are unbelievable at 15, 16 years old now.
I'm telling you, man, you got Ricky Fowler, you got Rory McIlroy, now you got Spieth. The future of golf is pretty bright, I will say that.
Did you see those two amateurs? One of them shot 3-under for the tournament. I mean,
yeah.
These guys are only 17, 18 years old, some of them.
Exactly, and Tiger can't even make the cut. Come on, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, come on, dude.
Well, you know, I think he's listening to way too many people. I think, like Nicklaus said, he should tone it down, listen to too many people. He's got his mind so set up on the driving and the irons and the putting. It's all going to heck on him.
It's like, you know, he has to go back to his old repertoire and just keep it simple. I definitely agree, Ray. Very good point, man. Very good point. Hey, Ray, appreciate the call, my man.
Buddy. God bless.
Thank you. All right, well, let's put a bow on the show by, of course, bringing you a segment that we always bring each and every Monday here called Weekend Winners, where we take a look at the weekend that was in the sporting world and bring to you who we thought won. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Yes, it is time for Weekend Winners. We look at the weekend that was and bring to you our Weekend Winners. First off, the obvious winners this weekend were all of the fathers out there in the world, okay? With Sunday being Father's Day. Again, a big salute to all the fathers out there, you know, including my own. I got a chance to go back to Detroit and see, you know, my dad. I saw my stepdad as well. Got to hang with him for a little bit. Saw my uncle as well. So even my cousin, he's a father. My brother, who's a father as well. So all the fathers out there, you guys were winners this weekend. Also on my list is Lansing United. Big win for them, a 4-0 victory for Lansing United as they top the Minnesota United Reserves yesterday at home. And Isaac, you were actually at that game at the East Lansing Soccer Complex, and a pretty cool, pretty special day because the game took place on Father's Day, and Matt Brown, you know, getting the score on Father's Day. I think you have a bite on him talking about what it means to honor his father in that way, I guess you could say, right?
I do, and he's such a nice guy. He's actually used to play in England. So, and earlier this year, he went through a serious scoring drought. And in the past three games, now he has 4 goals, finding his own. So the rest of the season looks bright. But here's Matt Brown talking about his game yesterday.
4 goals in 3 matches for you is a good return. And I'm sure you're happy to see the back of the net and see it.
Oh, yeah, it feels good. It's always been the same with me when I start scoring. And usually you're getting a good run. So hopefully you can carry on now to the end of the season.
I know it's a penalty, but getting a goal early in this match had to be a good relief for you guys, too, after the travel you had last week, to be able to get up and, and put the game plan in that way. That was a nice break.
Oh, it was, yeah, we needed, that's what we needed, the early start. And it's been a long week with three games, and we've come out with 9 points, so that's great.
We saw the really pretty goals last week when you're in Madison. That was a scruffy one, the second one in the second half, but that's the kind of score that goal scorers have to put in.
Oh, yeah, it could come off anywhere. It could come off your face, off your stomach, and as long as it goes in the net, that's all that matters, right? So.
What's the chemistry like now with you and Cholo and Steven up front? It looks like you three are really, really clicking together.
Oh, yeah, I think it helps with, like, stopping in the same apartments and that as well. We're just getting to know each other now, and along with all the other guys, the whole team. We've got a good, like, togetherness in the team.
There you have that. Again, Matt Brown talking about scoring on Father's Day, a 4-0 victory for Lansing United. So pretty cool stuff there. Also on my list, I got to give a shout out to Showtime Sean Porter, who put on a show as he dominated Adrian the Problem Broner for a unanimous decision victory in a 9-title matchup of the top welterweights on Saturday night at the main event of a Premier Boxing Champions card at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. Adrian Broner, a guy who reminds me so much of Floyd Mayweather, not in the way that he boxes, but on the show that he puts on outside the ring with the trash talking and whatnot. But Sean Porter, putting him in his place, an entertaining fight in the later rounds, pretty boring fight, you know, when you look at rounds 1 through 10 at least. Man, Sean Porter, watch out for that kid, because he's going to be a special fighter for years to come. Also, Max Scherzer throwing a no-hitter, and Tom Izzo landing Josh Langford, a 5-star guard out of Alabama. Also, new developments really quickly here as we close out the show. Prosecutors will not charge the MSU softball coaches in that whole investigation. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.